Honestly, I was thinking, I was like, oh my God, I'm finally going to look good in the stream. Because I have my hair done and my face done. You can't even tell.
Aw, I disagree. I think you look beautiful. Like, and your hair still looks dead on the camera. Look, listeners, find us on social medias. Tell Danielle her hair looked dead.
I did myself today. I did it. I did myself today. I didn't do what I did.
Words?
In love. I thought you were going to put the...
in love with movies, in love, in love, in love.
Danny and Nick.
In love with movies. Da da da.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to In Love with Movies.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Nick.
And this is In Love with Movies.
It is, and what do we do here on this podcast, Danielle?
Talking about movies in love.
That's right.
Yeah, but today's actually a special episode, Nick. Do you know why?
Is it because they have to only look at the two of us and we have no guests?
Yeah, they have to look at only us, hear only us. I don't know how many people actually look at us.
That's true. It's a smaller number. That's
which is
true.
Why I never usually do my makeup, but today I got my makeup did. And you can't tell.
But you actually got your makeup did because you were going to see drag queens. It has nothing to do with the fact that we were recording.
You can't even tell how much glitter I'm wearing.
I'm so sorry.
But anyways, it's also a special episode because this is our last episode of the fourth season, which means we've been married next month for 5 years. Where's the button? No, you... The button is... Thank you. What? They laugh at us. You've been married for 5 years. Good luck for the next 100.
I know some people who are laughing at us for being married for 5 years, but that's right. That's right. The day this episode will release.
Oh I'm goodness. So sorry. I'm sorry. It's okay. I dropped my water bottle, friends.
I'm going to have to cut that out. Okay. So I was saying, the day this episode actually releases will be our 9-year dateversary. It's on the day.
Yeah.
And then the following month, when season 5 will start, it starts with our 5-year wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
I know. So today, we decided we would talk to listeners and just kind of share a little bit of looking back, thinking about, oh boy, after 5 years of marriage, what do we think? What do we think about who we were? What are our lessons?
Boy.
And, you know, I think even more if we talk about, like, who we've become, who we've changed, how we've changed as people, and how we've managed to change together, especially over the 9-year span. So,
yeah. That's
almost
a lot.
A decade.
It's a 5-year reflection.
A 5-year reflection.
That couple I see staring straight back at me.
Oh, now I finally understand where the song is. I couldn't remember the lyrics to the song.
Why does my why can't my reflection show who I am
inside?
That was a very different key than what I was singing in.
Oh, I'm so sorry that I couldn't match your key.
Listen,
we have different registers.
Within our marriage, let's just get right into it. In our 5 years of marriage, we have taken singing lessons together. So we hypothetically should be able to match our keys.
We did that in year one of this 5-year marriage, so...
Is that true?
Yeah, because it would have been before pandemic.
The before times.
Of the 5 years, listeners, if you're listening to this 20 years from now, there was a time where we all stayed inside for 3.5 years, 2.5 years.
Yeah.
3 years, depending on who you were and where you were.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of weird because, like, we got married in 2018.
The end of it, basically, but...
September 22nd.
Third quarter.
The third quarter.
Fourth quarter, I meant to say. Like, fourth.
It was...
Fiscal quarter.
The
anyway.
First day of fall, second day of fall, whatever.
First day of fall, yeah.
And then... We were like, we're going to save up to go on a honeymoon. We went on a mini moon, courtesy of Nick's uncle.
Thank you.
Shout out Uncle Don. And we're like, we're going to save up to go to Rome. Next year, we're going to go to Rome.
Mm-hmm,
and then I don't know. We didn't save up. And then a pandemic happened.
Well, it was harder to save up. We were still in that first year of me having a job. And I think you ended up changing jobs. I think that's part of what happened.
Oh, yes. 2019 is when I started CPS.
Yeah. So you had started at that new job at CPS. And you didn't want to leave. You didn't have enough days to take off. Yeah. So then we put that off for one more summer. We're like, next summer we'll have the money. We'll still have the money. And then the next summer was 2020. So.
Well, the next March.
Yeah. Well, March is when the pandemic happened, but yeah.
We went to LA in 2019, at the end of 2019, for New Year's, and I remember us being like, this is our year. Like, literally. 2019 was not a good year. A lot of bad stuff happened. Like, things were rough.
Yeah. Little did baby us know. I mean, it's funny, because I can actually look back, and I can think about it. I remember 2016, we were like, oh my God, this is not our year. You lost parents and things. And remember,
grandparents, not parents.
You're right. Thank you. I appreciate the correction. Family members. But so 2017, we had gone into it being like, this is going to be our year. And I feel like stuff happened or something occurred.
There was also a horrible election.
I mean, I wasn't going to get into that, but yeah, that was 2016.
Yeah.
So, it was a bad year. Yeah. Anyway.
And then Nick was in his very stressful job and you were studying for comps. So there was just like, we kept saying next year, it'll be our year. And 2020, both of us were like, for sure.
Yeah, we were like, finally got this thing set. We're like adults now, we're, you know, married, we have, you know, monies.
Not a lot, but like enough that we could save up and maybe go to Europe.
I mean, it was the first, I think, for more than 6 months that both of us had an income.
Yeah.
Mostly my fault.
Listeners, if you don't know, I have been the sugar mama to Nick's sugar baby for 8¾ years.
Mm-hmm.
You just made it.
Just recently.
You're finally my sugar daddy.
I mean, it's time for you to get a promotion. It's usually about this time. After
then I'll just make more
after
money.
After I finally get ahead of you, then you get some new job that makes more money than me.
No,
so.
I'm going to purposely try not to get a promotion so that you can take care of me.
Be a kept woman, finally.
You'll finally take care of me. You've never done that in our marriage.
Yeah, I've never taken care of you.
I'm just a baby.
Just a baby.
You take care of me emotionally.
Yeah, speaking of that, though, I do think both of us have grown emotionally. I was probably much more angry.
Correct.
Had made a lot of progress in that department in the first several years of our relationship before we got married. And then had a bit of a backslide due to the stresses of said pandemic already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you've made a lot of, obviously, emotional progress. And I mean, like, don't get me wrong. You should. I feel like you should grow in 9 years. But I think there are a lot of people, and sometimes I know we do have some younger listeners or some people who are at earlier stages of their lives, and we've railed against this a lot on this podcast, but a lot of people believe that, like, oh, you find your person, and then, like, that's the person you're going to be with, so you stay the person you are when you met each other. And I just,
Rungo.
That's not been our experience. Not at all.
Yeah, I think we've definitely grown together. I think personally, I have grown a lot. You've grown less angry. I've grown more sure of myself and more able to express my needs. I think I always kept things on the inside, and that comes from childhood trauma and people pleasing, but we won't get into that. And yeah, I think for especially early on in our relationship, I was like, I can't tell Nick what I'm really thinking. Oh, he gonna break up with me.
Yes.
And now I know you're not going to break up with me.
Are you finally convinced? Because it was, I mean, years into our marriage even, you were still like, I mean, I'm not convinced yet.
I mean, there's still like a tiny little baby bit of doubt, but the more I look out there, first of all, you're getting old. And second of all,
damn,
I'm still the best thing out there for
that you. You are.
Not in general, but for you.
Well, and I think that's probably a good, you have grown maybe the most in that department, in your sort of comfort in our security, which, I don't know, to some degree, I guess it's true for me too, but I do think that's, for my money, because we often ask our guests, like, what's the secret sauce for, you know, making a relationship work, and we always get some, not always, often get some version of communication.
Correct.
Which is still true, but I also believe that a foundation of commitment, like a ability to feel trusting and confident that the person's not going to leave me. Because I think most of the times where we have stressed out and really panicked, even though if you were to ask me, like, do I think Danielle would ever leave me? Like, from basically day one, I would have said no. And in fact, I think early in our relationship, I probably made jokes about like, nah, she would never leave me. And so it's on me if I were to ever decide to leave her, which is, you know, like a good thing in the sense of like security, quote unquote, from my perspective, but also kind of, you know, it, like gives you the, like the, you have the responsibility to decide whether or not this is actually going to work out. Like it's on you to make that decision because as you said, you don't even share your feelings or did not share your feelings as much 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. So earlier in those days, you could have probably gotten to a point where you were like, I don't think this is going to work out. I'm really disappointed. I don't think this is what I want. And you might have still kind of stayed silent.
That's true.
Versus me, if I had ever gotten to that point earlier in our, even in the first year, I'd have been like, deuces. But I never got there. Even from day one.
Why do you think that I would never leave you? Why did you think that early on?
Because you told me.
Oh. Because I'm a needy little baby with the daddy issues.
A little bit, yeah.
But also because from the moment I met you, even though I didn't say it out loud or think about it, I knew you were my person. I just felt it.
Yeah.
I know that's dumb and corny, but like, Nick, I say this all the time. I hope you don't get offended. You know it by now. Nick is not my type.
Oh, yeah, I'm done.
He's not.
Being offended by that.
Yeah. He's not the person I would ever go for. He's not, I don't know, anything I ever dated before. And I think that's why you stuck. Because you were what I didn't know I needed.
Yes. I do think there's a lot of truth to that. I do think the one amendment I would give to you saying I am not your type is that we should probably start transitioning into using past tense when using it. I am not what your type was.
Correct.
Or I was not your type when we met.
You're my type. And
but, you know, that's okay, not to get into too much, but like the years aren't perfect, but you were just past 20 when we met.
I was 22.
Uh-huh. Almost a decade ago,
yeah.
And you are now just past 30. So when you think about it like that, we have been together for a third of your life almost.
Dang.
So you think like, yeah, of course, you know, the type of person you were. But that to me betrays exactly the point we kind of started with of like, it's this belief that when you're an adult and or when you find the person that is your person, like you're just, that you're a fully baked human being and you're never going to change because
yeah.
You're an adult. As if being 18 or being 21 or being out of college, just like snap of the fingers, you are the human being you are going to be for the rest of your lives.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that is a deep flaw in a lot of relationships.
I agree. I think we had to learn how to grow together and also kind of like in a healthy way, I like to think. I think we have a pretty healthy marriage.
Overall.
We had to help shape the other person.
Yes.
Por ejemplo. Nick did not look the way he does.
Wow, no. Let's just stick it right to the surface deep. You know, I'm here I am. Let's get into the deep emotions. And then you're like, Nick was fat and not nearly as handsome when I first met him.
No, I knew you were handsome. I saw it underneath. It was the Anne
yes,
Hathaway moment,
sure. Uh-huh.
The Princess Diaries moment where they brush her mm-hmm. hair and take her glasses off.
Uh-huh.
And she's always been Anne Hathaway. I always knew. You just got LASIK. You grew a beard. You ate more vegetables.
I am far more offended by this than you saying I was not your type or am not your type. But yeah, and through that, I think that each of us has changed. We have helped the other change. And then also we definitely as a couple have changed. And I think you should.
Agreed. Because also we talked about this a lot early on when we were early on was like, we didn't really have the same interests, right? And you were talking about how
mm-hmm.
a lot of people get together based on similar interests, but like the person I was 9 years ago who was super interested in like tennis and the job I had at the time, and I had very different interests than the person I am today. So I'm glad we didn't relate on interests because like those things change so often.
Yeah, I mean like for you, what was tennis is now probably drag race. And drag queens.
Or fitness, or...
That's fair.
Comedy,
but,
or...
I mean, I would label those things. I was trying to, like... I don't mean that as, like, you didn't like drag queens, but I don't think you were as... You weren't, like, desperately searching for every version in multiple languages, as long as you could understand it, of the same drag race TV show. You weren't going to drag brunches as often as you are now to support your local drag queens, mm-hmm. In addition to being a fan of... And I'm just, like, I'm using that as a label of, like, it's fine, it's a good thing, I think it's great that is your thing. But just like tennis, like I enjoy it. I am happy it is for you. I like partaking from time to time, but it is not my, I'm not as excited for it as you are.
Yeah, and we had to learn to support each other's interests too, whatever they might be. Like, movies.
Correct. Imagine this whole that. Podcast. I mean, it took 5 years of our relationship before I got you to say yes to this, and that means you had to watch, God forbid, everyone, when we first did this, the idea that she was going to have to watch one movie a month was difficult for her to swallow. And now we are up to weekly movie nights.
That's correct. And also I think about like understanding each other more through our interests in those things. Like, I did not understand your need to play video games. It just didn't make sense to me.
Uh-huh.
Or I didn't understand your need for, quote, Nick time.
Uh-huh.
Early on, Nick said, I didn't understand that people have to be alone sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And so you were saying, I just need Nick time. I need to be alone. I said, you're cheating on me.
Uh-huh.
That's your time when you're with other women.
It took multiple years for you to understand that was not true.
And now I realize that you literally need to be with Nick to recharge.
I think it was at least until, because we were together for about a year before you moved closer and before I moved into the city again.
Mm-hmm.
So when we first met each other, Danielle lived in the city, like downtown, but I lived out in the suburbs, a good 35 miles away. We were connected by train, so it made it not too inconvenient most of the time. Somewhere about a year after we were dating, I moved into the city, and you moved into, I guess not right away, because the first time I moved into the city, you didn't immediately move to, did you? It doesn't matter. Anyway, so, like, I moved close to the city. We moved into the same neighborhood, but we were, like, for us, our decision was we wanted to be closer. We knew that. We were not yet ready to be living together for many reasons, because we were only a year in. I know some people that move in together within, like, months and are happily ever after. I do not think that would have worked for us because of the whole theme of this episode is like we had to progress and we had a lot of growth to do before we would have been happy living together. So we did that. And then eventually, finally, like a year or two later, we moved in together. And I genuinely think you didn't fully believe that Nick time was just me probably playing video games or watching Netflix until you had your first experience of like, we both lived in the same house. In the morning, for whatever reason, I had the day off, and I was playing video games as you would leave to go be with friends, and I was going to have my Nick time. And then you came back 4 or 5 hours later, and I had literally not moved. Like, probably been up to pee once. And other than that, I was sitting in the same clothes, I was playing the same game, and you were like, oh, no, he really can sit for 6 to 8 hours doing nothing but this thing. And it's like, yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Because that's not you. Because you could never sit for 6 to 8 hours doing one thing.
I hate it. Is there one thing about me that you think you had to, like, learn like that?
Hmm.
For me, it was, like, Nick time and video games. And also your need to, I don't know why the word expunge is, that's not the right word.
Uh-oh, I don't know where
this is going. Soak in content at all times. Like, for Christmas a couple years ago, I bought Nick a thing that goes around your neck that holds your phone in front of you so you can pee while using your phone or, like, make food or whatever because you were just always on your phone.
Yeah, I was always watching a YouTube video and or listening to a podcast.
And I think I was judgmental about it at first, but then I realized, like, oh, you're just a smart boy who likes to,
I like to constantly be learning new things. Yeah. Yes.
Is it annoying sometimes? Yeah.
But that also goes into a place where I feel like I've changed in the 5 years since we've been together. I have become better at accepting that there is just too much knowledge in the world, too much content online, that a person will never, ever, ever be able to keep up with all of it, especially someone like me. Like, you can't even keep up. Obviously, you can't keep up with all of it. It'd be impossible. But even most people who have a normal amount of interest in a normal number of things can't keep up with just the things that they're interested in. Then you add to me, like, I want to watch every single movie that comes out. I really want to be watching every single prestige TV show that's coming out. And in addition to that, I want to watch a lot of the, like, comic book related superhero stuff, whether it's prestige or not. And then she's literally glazing over just from me describing the things that I'm interested in. And then on top of all of that, I love, like, science and what's going on. Like, one of the things that I was watching back then, it's kind of discontinued now, is Discovery News, which were these short videos a couple of times a week that would be like, here's what's happening in the latest in science literature, you know, physics or astronomy or chemistry. And, yeah, the average person is like, why would I want that?
Okay, But you didn't answer my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My question was, what is the thing about me that you feel like you had to learn? It doesn't have to be like a thing.
Yeah, no, you asked other questions that took me down other paths that those were easier to answer.
Your brain moves too fast.
Uh-huh. What I've learned, though, is to let go of that I can't. And so I have changed. Instead of, I don't watch content. Well, I watch and or listen to content still a lot.
But about me?
Would you let me finish my thought on the tangent?
Talk about me.
I gotta finish the thing first.
Okay.
You're perfect. Does that make you feel better? That nothing has needed to be changed? I did not need to change anything about you or learn anything about you. You are perfect exactly as you are.
No. That's not what I want to hear.
I think the biggest thing, because this is more deep than innocuous, but I think the biggest thing for me was probably learning that you need time to process things. That, like, I process things typically by talking them out. And we've talked about this before on this podcast.
You couldn't tell.
Feeling attacked a little bit.
Sorry.
Thank you. All right. The other thing is, I think navigating mother-in-laws for both of us. I mean, and I feel like that's stereotypical, so we don't need to go into it too much. But, you know, just we both had very different upbringings and different relationships to our mothers, partially because of gender, partially because of life experiences, yada, yada, yada. And so for me, of course, when you make it to adulthood and you're like, this is the way, as long as you have a remotely healthy relationship with your parent, I think you're kind of like, this is the way people are supposed to relate to their parents. And then you go and you have to see, in a way you've never seen before, another human being relate to their parent in a different way. And you're like, yeah, hold on, this doesn't make sense. Why are you doing this? And your first instinct is to basically say, you're wrong.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that we've both grown up. Obviously, we were young, and now we're not as young anymore.
No. What? I'm closer to 40 than I am 30, so.
I mean, Miley Cyrus just released a song that is very much relatable. We used to be young. And we're not old either, but, like, I do think in that almost decade of us being together, we grew as people, and we grew as partners, and we are able to truly, through the other person, learn things about ourselves too. Like, yeah. I would not have learned about my relationship with my mom or like my family if it weren't for you.
Same. largely same. There's been some revelations. I think I had done more progress on my relationship with my family and how I related to them than you maybe had by then. But I also think that had a lot to do with me losing my father as an adult that causes you to have to kind of like investigate that relationship and think about what that is in a way that if you lose a parent when you're very young, like you did, you're kind of like, you're just stunted. Reeling. Yeah. You have no real, you know, ability to kind of look back on that or retrospect at the time.
Yeah. So I think overall we've helped each other grow. We've kind of shaped each other into better people, but never, I would say never forceful.
Yes. And I think that's an important piece too, that I would, as much as you love to make jokes about, like, you changed me, or you made me this, or you made me grow a beard, or you made me, you know, eat more vegetables. Factually accurate, especially that second one. But it is not something that you made. It was just like, here, let's, it's kind of, in the parlance that I would like to use is always social psychology or things of that nature. And we would use the term nudge. It's like just making it easier for you to make this choice kind of thing. And I think the other thing that comes with that, and it goes back to the first thing I said of like feeling that secure commitment, the safety to continually share more and more of the sadder, darker, more serious, more introspective parts of ourselves with each other. Stuff that we probably in the last 5 years have shared on this podcast with strangers, but when we first met each other would not have shared with each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a huge piece for me personally, because I largely feel like I have spent most of my life having to, and now that I look back, fit into some mold, or whether I knew I was doing it or, you know, consciously or not, I was trying to hide parts of myself that I had, you know, decided that society or individuals did not like. That includes, you know, the fact that we're sitting in a room just surrounded by comic book nerd stuff it was like this, that small thing is something I had to hide, or the fact that I had emotions other than anger, very much sort of, you know, going to the toxic masculinity thing, or silly, stupid things that I've done in terms of, you know, just the ways that I relate to you or to other people. And through every turn, on the smallest to the largest scale, where I have shared something with you that was scary to share, you have stayed with me. And that's slowly been, therefore, I now have learned, like, oh, even though it's scary to share this thing, I feel more and more comfortable to share it with other people because I have shared it with you and not been immediately spurned. And that's that. If there's anybody out there who's listening that is still somewhere early in a relationship or is single, even, that is like the best advice I could give. Is, and it's so hard. It's so hard. But be as much of yourself as you can possibly share, because the person who doesn't make you feel good about sharing that is not your person.
Yeah.
Hands down.
I would say for me, it's similar, but like through seeing how much you unconditionally loved me, not past tense, hopefully
still do,
I was able to love myself more and be able to figure out who I am more and be able to embrace my weirdness. And like, I didn't start comedy until Nick kind of encouraged me to.
Yeah, you like expressed that it was something you were curious about or interested in or had always thought about, or and I was like, why not? And you kind of were like, well, because who does that? And I was like, anyone who wants to.
Yeah. Or like you said, sometimes I have dark thoughts too that I just was like, no, shush, shush. No, little brain. It's okay. Don't go there. And you've almost, I would say, encouraged me to explore that more. And through that, I've been able to grow more. Not perfect, where I'm not ever where I need to be, but like Nick is home and Nick is safe. And so that's where I can expose all of me, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah. It looked like you had some questions on your phone you wanted to get
hey,
to.
Hey, Nick, do you want to know how much growth I've had?
Let's do it.
I prepared.
Holy
for this
crap.
Podcast.
Listeners, longtime listeners will know that this is huge. Mark the date. August 29th, 2023 is when this will be released. Mark that date. The first time Danielle, as the talent, came prepared with something for this podcast.
I just wrote these 5 minutes
ago.
It's
not entirely true, but it's still fun to say.
I wrote these right before we started. But I still prepared.
5 minutes of preparation.
In my notes app,
the true
people.
Improviser.
That's right. Okay, I have questions for you.
Bring it.
What do you think is the most romantic thing I've ever done for you? And I'm going to answer the same one.
Mm. See, this is not entirely fair, because now then you've had, even if it's just 5 minutes, you've had 5 minutes or however long you were thinking about these questions to prepare to answer them for yourself.
All right, while you think about that, I'll answer the one for me.
Okay.
I think, well, Nick knows I love surprises, and I almost, like, forced him to throw me a surprise party. But I think, like, the most romantic things that Nick has ever done is just, like, surprise me with cute things that he knows I love. And the first time you did that was when I thought we were going out to dinner. You're like, get dressed. We're going to go out to dinner. And I was like, where are we going? Where are we going? We were just walking down the street, and we showed up at the Chicago Theater, right?
Okay.
And you're like, actually, we're going to Straight No Chaser. And it was like a cute little Christmas surprise. And that was the first time we saw them, was when you surprised me with that concert. And you knew I'd been asking about it and talking about it. And I was like, I love Straight No Chaser. And then you secretly got me tickets and then secretly had me show up. And
Other things that have apparently changed in the last 9 years, I am way lazier when it comes to.
That's what marriage is.
Anyway, continue.
But we can get back to
and
it.
What?
And then you did say, I tried really hard to get a horse and carriage.
I do remember that.
But it didn't work out. But even the thought of you trying to get it, because we still haven't gone on a horse and carriage ride.
We have not. They become less and less popular because it's become known that the people apparently do not treat the horses very well. Yeah.
But yeah, I just remember that as being like, oh my gosh, this my guy. Or anytime you bring me flowers, I think that's so romantic. Without me asking. Which I've stopped asking.
For the most part, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There have been one or two occurrences on, ironically, anniversaries and or dateversaries.
It's like you're supposed to be
where you were flowers. Like pissed that I had not gotten you flowers and had not thought of it in advance.
Well, it's never, the law.
Now, mind you, just listeners so that I'm being fair to myself here. Every single one of those instances, she got gifts, plural, gifts. But one of those things was not flowers, therefore I had done wrong.
Gifts is my love language.
It is. And I think physical touch is mine, which is why when I was sitting here thinking about romantic things that you've done, part of me wanted to say my 30th birthday party, because I genuinely did not see that coming. It was very sweet.
I threw him a surprise party.
Yes. But then actually, I think, and I can't remember the exact context, but I feel like we were in a fight at some point on something, and you just walked over and hugged me. And that, like, calmed so much of what was going on, the emotional turmoil in me, and it completely reset whatever the fight was that we were having, and I'm getting, like, choked up, obviously, thinking about this. And then maybe the next thing would be, and it just occurred to me because it's kind of in the same vein, is you hugging me. I remember, without going into too much detail, right before I went into therapy in February of 2020, I had like kind of a nervous breakdown at our kitchen table, and before you then helped me find a therapist that moment, you also that just like literally I was a ball of nothing, and you were like, what can I do? And I was like, nothing. And I just was totally wrought and bawling and angry and all of the things. And you just sat down and hugged me then too. And that wasn't anything you had done wrong. It was just, there was no fight involved. But yeah, both of those were probably some of the most romantic things. And I think it took you a long time to realize, like, that was what I sometimes need. Just like a little baby boy. Like, just needs a hug.
That's okay. I like hugging you. I don't like hugging anyone else.
Anyway. You
know, there are some things that, this is a thought I've never shared.
Uh-oh.
Like, sometimes I think I'll be in a situation and I'm like, it would be really, Nick would be like the best husband ever if he brought me this or did this or opened the door or did this. And every single time I think that, you do it.
That can't be true.
No, it really is. And so that's why still after all these years, I'm like, check, confirmed. He still is the one that I want. He's still the nice guy that I married.
It helps to be a nice guy every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay, what do you think is our favorite like trip we ever took for you? Ooh.
That is tough. I liked the first trip to LA, California, although I really liked a lot of what we did the second time out there. This is going to say more about my personality than yours.
I know what you're about to say.
Go for it.
Wisconsin Dells.
Oh, no, actually, I really did enjoy Wisconsin Dells also. No, whatever, wherever it was, I think we went in Michigan or somewhere. Maybe it was Wisconsin. The like, cabin that's like a transport crate.
Ugh.
Tiny cabin.
Yeah.
And I knew you'd say, ugh. Like, we spent a weekend at Getaway House and literally, like, just did nothing but be in nature and quiet. And I enjoyed that a lot.
Except for we were woken up to the sounds of gunshots.
That's true.
Because the guy who had the backyard next to the place was, like, shooting birds. scary.
I remember us talking a lot on that trip.
Yeah.
Because I think that through most modern Western lives, we just have stuff going. We were talking about content and me constantly digesting stuff and watching stuff. And there was a lot more silence that we had to fill. And therefore, you know, we filled it. And I just remember feeling very connected to you.
Yeah, I like that.
How about you?
I think I really liked when we went to Mexico.
It was a fun trip. I really enjoyed the things we did, the people we met, the time we had.
Yeah, and I think we were very close to each other at that point, and also like that was the first vacation I remember thinking, oh, we found a balance of like enjoying the way that we both vacation, because that's one of our fights is like Nick likes to he likes to just chill.
Yeah.
And when I'm on a vacation in a new city, I'm like, let's go see it all. And so it's taken a long time to find a balance between those two things.
I would also say some of our earlier trips, and I know Lizzie doesn't really listen, but our friend Lizzie, hey Liz, when she lived in Peru, we went and saw her in Peru, and that was one of my worst times in terms of my behavior with regards to traveling. But earlier on, and this is another huge change that's happened with us, I think we have gotten a lot better at traveling together.
Mm-hmm.
We used to, A, you always want to like have everything planned out in advance. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
B, you, ironically, you would think that means that I would handle unexpected things better. No, especially if we have planned something and then that thing does not go the way that it was supposed to in the plan.
Yeah.
It is like red alert for me. It is the terrible times. And Peru was one of them. But Mexico, the reason I'm bringing all of this up to bring it back to Cancun, Mexico, there were things that happened on that trip that were very bad, very unexpected. Uh-huh. And I actually think, even though they stressed me out, they didn't stress me out as much. And we navigated them together in a way that was able to resolve it, deal with any anxieties that I was having, and move on, as opposed to letting it like kind of ruin that day, if not ruin the whole trip.
I agree. That's why I liked it.
Yeah, I deal with that.
And to be honest, it was the first time we had gone on vacation since lockdown.
I was going to say, also
and
pandemic.
We were vaccinated and like we were felt
vaccation
so
baby
free.
Yeah.
It was like enjoying life over again.
Yeah.
As if it's over. This is a vague one.
Okay.
Maybe it could be in marriage. I don't know. I was going to say this earlier. I think it's hard to talk about our marriage because there really were like 2.5 of the 50% of our marriage was in COVID.
Yep.
So it was like hard to just enjoy being newlyweds. But anyways, I just wrote down like, what is your favorite memory of us?
Oh, that's an easy one, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I'm sure we've probably told the story on the podcast before. So apologies, listeners, longtime listeners, if you're getting this again. No, it was the very first time we were listening to the Ed Sheeran album. X, Multiply, right? That's whatever the title of that album is. It's got a song, Tenerife Sea. It ended up being the one that we danced to at our wedding. But I can remember within the first few months of us dating, that album being out, I think it was the first time I overtook you home to Ohio. We were at home in my mom's old house, sitting at the dining room table, and we were playing chess, which, by the way, is also one of those things that Danielle pretended to like way more than she actually did when we were early on.
I was a faker.
Uh-huh. A lot of things were fake, but not the important ones. But we were playing chess, and we were just listening to that album sort of on a low volume, and Tenerife Sea came on, and if anyone's ever heard the lyrics, you know what I mean? You can, you know, imagine the, you know, you look so beautiful, and you're, and like, the talking about the description of the person kind of matched a little bit of your description, blue eyes, blonde hair, stuff like that. And I remember just sort of like moving a piece and then like staring at you across the table. And then eventually you met my eyes and we both kind of like, without saying a word, stopped playing the game for a moment, paused, and just sort of felt it. And it felt like, without a word, you knew that I was like in my heart singing all of those lyrics to you. And we both teared up a little bit and we had a moment. And yeah, that I think is the moment that I was convinced you were my person for the rest of my life. And that's, and I had my suspicions long before that, but that was it, I think. So
that's sweet. I guess mine is, by the way, that became our wedding song.
Yeah, that's
our
what
first
I said.
Dance song. Did you say that?
I did.
Oh. I was
Continue.
Listening. I think that my favorite memory, I'm just thinking about our wedding, marriage, all that stuff.
I barely remember our wedding, to be honest.
Same.
I remember it being a good time.
However, I remember coming down the aisle and just looking at you and like no one else existed in that moment. And before that, honestly, every hour before that, I pooped. I pooped many times. I was so anxious. I couldn't sleep the night before. And I don't think I was anxious to marry you. I think I was anxious for the wedding and something was going to go wrong.
Sure.
But like the second I opened the doors and I saw you, like everything went away. Mm. All the nerves, everything. Mm. It was just, oh, that's my boy.
Because you're talking about our wedding and because you're talking about walking down the aisle, that is very sweet. I remember I remember having all the feels when that happened also. I'm going to give a quick shout out to a new friend who I know is listening to our back catalog and therefore will listen to this at some point in the future. Recently saw photos of their wedding, Montana. I'm talking about you. And it like so very much reminded me of the aisle for our wedding because the way that things were laid out and the fact that it was right on a lake. And so, hey, Montana, your wedding looked cool and sweet and awesome. And we're sorry we weren't able to be there. It was gorgeous. And you two looked just as happy as we did on our wedding day. Yes, we were invited. That's the thought you're having.
Oh, I didn't know we were invited. Okay, two more questions, and then we got to talk about the movie.
The movie!
I guess we could just talk to each other forever, though, which is kind of why we got married.
No, we watched a movie, so we have to talk about the movie. It's obligatory.
Okay. Yep. Uh-huh. I guess what's been the toughest part of marriage?
I don't know if I feel comfortable sharing that.
That's fair. Yeah. I was going to say just not a single thing, the toughest part is the fights, or is the
sure
is where we grow the most, but the in between sucks.
And I think that's an important thing to note too. It is where you grow the most. If you are quote unquote fighting right, and you are speaking to each other, like any two people who try to combine their lives, as we've articulated, you're not the same person. You're not the same person when you meet each other. So you have to figure out how to navigate that. And then within time, you're going to be different people throughout the course of your marriage. Therefore, you have to navigate that. And at any given moment, and that's where they talk about communication being the most important. At any given moment, you're going to have to find ways to make the different people that you are work together as a joint thing. And I would agree with that. But despite those always being the most difficult times, it is often the most growth.
Agreed.
And I can remember early on, I was the one who especially insisted on, we were a little bit of that, like, don't go to bed angry kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we had some late nights sometimes.
Yeah.
But it, to your point, like, it's because we had to explain and at least for me, both of us, I think, were very early on struggling to even find the words to express our own emotions. So if you are feeling this, listener, ever in your relationship, know that you're not alone. It is difficult to express your emotions, and it is even harder when it feels like it matters. Because I've just said, like, oh, you know, you found your person, you know this person's the person you want to be with, and then all of a sudden, everything has stakes. So now it feels that much more scary and threatening to share your true thoughts and feelings and emotions.
But it's worth it.
Exactly. Because one of two things will happen. I promise you, one of two things will happen. You will share enough to the point where you become certain the person is not for you, or you will share enough to the point where you will start to grow.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, that second part happens, and it happens faster, and then you just keep doing more of it. So.
Yes.
Hopefully I'm not cutting out. It feels like I'm cutting out, but.
No, you're good.
Okay. Next.
Yeah, or same answer.
Same?
Yeah.
Okay.
And finally, what are you looking forward to in our next 100 years of marriage?
Like, far down the line?
Just anything in general. What are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to, I think, two things, and it's funny because they may be the antithesis of each other.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to the day when the combination of our joint incomes and the lack of especially unexpected house-related issues reaches a point where I feel financially secure to a level that, like, I'm... We have been very blessed, we've been very lucky, but I don't ever feel like we are, like, I feel like we're treading water or, like, trying really hard to stay afloat, as opposed to what it feels like sometimes with our peers or contemporaries, that they look like, oh, they're really well off, and they've got more than enough money to have saved, and some of them I've known have to, you know, take sabbaticals and things like that, or have, you know, like a year off from work. I don't know what the hell we would do if either one of us, like, lost a year from work.
Yeah.
So the antithesis of that, the other thing that I'm looking forward to, is eventually the day when we have kids. I really look forward to raising children with you, because I think that because of a lot of what we've talked about has to do with, I think, processing continued stuff. And one of my latest kicks is really thinking about generational trauma. And for those of you who don't, like, don't believe in that, just for what it's worth,
you're wrong.
Well, psychologically, I personally believe you are wrong. But what I was going to say is there's growing evidence, too, where they're looking at the genetics and having trauma, and they've especially done this with, like, Jewish people from the Holocaust or other huge traumatic things that happened in sort of an ethnic population, where they then, therefore, it creates a natural study, a natural experiment. They've figured out that huge traumas in a individual's life changes some of the phenotypes of their genetics, which they then pass on to their kids, and a lot of them seem to be tied to anxiety. So I would make the argument that potentially one of the reasons we've talked about, like, oh, you know, life more depressed. It's like, I think the more people are depressed and then they don't deal with it, and then they pass that, like, anxiety and depression and trauma on to their children, not only behaviorally from what they see, but literally, it would seem, genetically. You combine those two things, it's bad. We can't change the genetics immediately, but we have done a lot to work on, I think, our traumas, more so perhaps than previous generations largely have. And I don't think that's unique to you and I, but I do think it's true of our generation. And I'll stop talking because I'm getting the, Nick, you're using too many words look.
Well, it's funny because that was actually going to be my answer too.
Having kids?
Yeah. Okay. Well, like starting a family and, yeah, I was going to say it in less psychological speak. I'm mostly looking forward to just, like, having baby Nick and Danielle's and them walking around saying, well, actually, the psychological term for that and then dropping it low in the next moment.
I genuinely hope that's exactly
twerking
what our future children do.
Geniuses.
Twerking geniuses.
They're going to get their humor and their...
love for life.
Yes, their zest from me and their smarts and their straightforwardness from you.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Well, that was all the questions I had.
Well, I think that times out pretty perfectly, actually.
And...
actually.
That's Nick's favorite word. I used to call him actually. The movie, we didn't even say it.
We have not said it yet.
And I picked this movie because...
because...
this is actually the first movie that Nick and I ever watched together that
actually.
We remember. So, we're going to talk about what movie, Nick?
We're going to be talking about The Usual Suspects, and I think I managed to get that correct this time.
The Usual Suspects.
I always want to say The Unusual Suspects for some reason.
Yeah.
I'm just, like, scrolling through, and I'm probably going to have to edit some of this, but I think we had more ratings to share, and that's why I'm scrolling. So, I wanted to make sure. Yes. Okay.
Can I read it?
Sure.
All right. These are our love notes, no?
Yes. So this is the love notes section of the podcast, listeners. If you want to share your thoughts on our podcast, please go share your thoughts with a 5-star review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you do that, we will read it on a future episode where all of your thoughts will be what we then express as long as you give us 5 stars. So actually, if you listen to only one episode, decide that you totally hate us, but you want to talk about how I'm a pedant and how much you hate me, then please, by all means, give us a 5-star review, and then all of your thoughts will be shared with the entire world. Or if you want to plug out your own stuff or anything like that, as long as you give us 5 stars, we'll go ahead and read whatever you write.
Great. So this one is called Sweet Optimism... dot, dot, dot. I wonder if there was a longer title.
Probably, yeah.
5 stars from Scoop Staley.
Hi, Scoop. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Scoop. Scoop. Thus far, the season 4 lineup is nothing but bangers.
Ooh.
Double entendre, question mark? Oh. That's funny. They are choosing movies that are must-sees, and the crew offers great insights and little screaming at my speaker for lack of knowledge. Oh, cool.
Hey, we actually sound like we know what we're talking about,
great,
apparently.
Thanks, Scoop. I come for the movies. Check out my podcast, 94 Chill, the podcast with Cat Bus Russ.
Okay.
But leave with optimism. The tales of love cannot help but relax any stress of being single. Guilty? Because the pod does a great job at leaving you feeling like there is someone out there for everyone. Oh, how they incorporate this into movie chatter is brilliant. Thank you, Scoop.
Sounds like that may be actually Cat Bus. So thank you very much, Russ, for listening. And for listeners who are not already giving us information, by the way, that's you can plug your own podcast. You can go hear me on Cat Bus Russ. 90 for Chill. Look, 90 for Chill. That's going to be a lot easier. 90 for Chill. I was on an episode a while ago, and we're very grateful. So, another great, fun show about movies.
Scoop.
All right.
Well, I'm going to go poop, and okay. Then we'll come back.
That's going on the internet. All right. We'll see you on the other side, movie lovers.
In love with movies. Da da da.
And we're back. Welcome back, movie lovers, to In Love with Movies. This is the second half where you may have jumped to where we actually talk about a movie.
Yeah, if you're like, love and reflections on marriage, screw that. Well, you missed out on gems.
Yes, it is the secret to a happy, healthy life.
Yeah,
over
we
there.
Own the secret to yep. a happy marriage. So.
Complete experts here.
Yep.
Dripping with sarcasm. But seriously, we like to think that we know a little bit of something from people who have not been together as long. But now we're going to talk about a movie. We're going to talk about a movie.
We're going to talk about movie. Singular.
I said a movie. I'm confused.
Never mind.
Okay. What movie are we talking about, Danielle?
We are talking about The Usual Suspects.
That's right. 1995. Well-known classic movie amongst movie lovers and people. I think this is one of those sort of suspense, surprise ending movies. It's definitely, I think, among the modern canon for, like, didn't see that coming endings type of deal.
Is this on your top 100 movies list?
It is over there on the top 100 movies list from my brother that I got.
According to the world, or people who make the top 100 movies list, This is a must-see top 100 movie, so.
I don't know if it's on AFI. It might also be on AFI, because the 100 movies list you're talking about is a cool poster that I got, but that's not necessarily AFI's list. Oh. I'd be curious. It might be. Maybe I'll figure that out. But before we get going with things, I just want to borrow a parlance from one of my favorite podcasts.
A what?
Fake Doctors, Real Friends.
What the fuck's a parlance?
Turn of phrase. set of words.
Nick, I know we've been together for 9 years, but you still surprise me with the words that come out your mouth.
I don't know. I might be using that one incorrectly. Somebody can correct me online. Anywho, to use the phrase, taking from Fake Doctors, Real Friends, because I like to cite my sources when I steal things. Mm-hmm. They, you know, what's the, you know, you've thrown me off. I've forgotten what the phrase was that they. Now I remember. Scandal noted. Okay. Scandal noted right off the bat for some of the people involved in this particular movie. For those of you who don't know, we will mention some names that there are definitely some scandals involved in. I'm not necessarily going to get into them because, you know, legal and all that jazz and wanting to believe an innocent before proven guilty. But, you know, sometimes when there's a whole history of a lot of people that said that you did some terrible things or are a pretty terrible person, there's that going on. So there's more than just the people in front of the camera, also some people behind the camera, et cetera, and so forth. Go ahead and Google some of the names I'm about to list in our opening credits and see what comes up with the word scandal. Anywho.
Yikes. So that also has changed since we watched this the first time.
Yes.
But we
can talk about 100%. That. 100%.
Yes. So get into the opening credits, and I'm going to refer to that person after you say their name one time as the bad guy. The bad.
There's more than one, and I'm not even sure you know about them. But
okay. Anyway, well, I'm not going to say his name.
Director, Bryan Singer, behind the camera, also known for Bohemian Rhapsody, a lot of the X-Men movies. One of my favorites, Superman Returns, was actually a movie I really like about him. Scandal noted. But his directorial stuff has been kind of hit and miss for me. But some of them, when he hits hard. And this is one of those movies as well. I think it was one of his earlier. Written by Christopher McQuarrie. So Christopher McQuarrie, some of his credits include Rogue One, Edge of Tomorrow, and Top Gun Maverick. So lots of hits there.
I like him.
Seems to be a really, you know, very much up our alley in terms of writers.
Is he Scandal?
Not that I know of necessarily for
we
Christopher
stan him.
McQuarrie.
Cool.
Kevin Spacey, Scandal noted, but also famous for Seven, House of Cards, 21, American Beauty. Phenomenal actor in a lot of roles. Some of which maybe he wasn't acting that hard, as it turns out. Anyway, so then we've also got Gabriel Byrne, who plays the kind of main person in this, Keaton, or one of the main people, I should say. They were kind of, I think, this is one of those movies that's like a lot of sort of that guy types of people, and many of the that guys have gone on to bigger fame, but the 90s, they were kind of right in the middle there. So Gabriel Byrne's been in End of Days, Hereditary, some other things. Chaz Pimentel, who's known for being in Modern Family, he's the one who you realize, like, oh, that's Jay's friend. That's Jay's friend, Shorty. Yeah,
Shorty.
So that's Chaz. He also, then we've got Stephen Baldwin. Stephen Baldwin, he's one of the lesser known Baldwins besides Alec, the brothers.
But is he Fred Flintstone?
Yes. I was going to say he played Flintstone in a sequel, Barney.
He was Barney
in a sequel. Yeah. He also, I know him from being in Biodome, one of the many sort of stupid Pauly Shore comedies from the late 90s. I liked that a lot back in my day. Benicio del Toro. People who listen to us probably know him from Last Jedi. Kevin Pollak, Mrs. Maisel. We're huge fans of Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, he plays Moishi.
I think it's pronounced Moishi.
Moishi.
Giancarlo Esposito.
He's Darksaber. Right?
Moff Gideon, yes.
Moff Gideon.
Darksaber. also Breaking Bad, for those of you who have watched that. He is the very, very scary villain in that. Dan Hedaya, and I apologize, I may not be pronouncing all of these correct. He's the dad from Clueless. We've covered Clueless before, so the dad from Clueless, that's Dan Hedaya. And then Pete Pastelwaite, and I know I'm mispronouncing.
Pestlewaite.
I think you're right. It's a T, not a K. I can't even read my own handwriting. But that's Kobayashi. He plays the sort of eponymous lawyer in the movie that we're talking about. But he, I know from The Town and Romeo and Juliet and Lost World and some other things. So I think, a really good character actor. Another one of those everymans. All right, I'm done with my stuff. That is the opening credits. Let's get into your love story with this movie. And I will say, I watched this at some point before the story Danielle is about to tell. my first watching was not at all necessarily particularly outstanding for me. So it's more my love story is Danielle's love story.
Yeah. I said this before the break, but all y'all who don't like love didn't hear it. This was actually the first movie I remember watching with Nick because we went on a lot of dates early on. Like, we would just go out and eat food a lot.
Sure.
Nick lived in Palatine at the time, and I lived in Chicago. And I remember coming out to Palatine in your tiny little studio apartment and this being the first movie that we just watched together. And I had told him my my favorite genre of movie, which is woman power. We've talked about this, but you know, like She's the Man, Clueless,
Legally Blonde. How could you forget Legally Blonde?
My brain is not working. Miss Congeniality, all that stuff. But Nick was like, I think you're going to like this. I really think you're going to like this, and I want you to trust me. And because I was falling head over heels for this guy, I was like, okay, I'll trust him. I've always heard The Usual Suspects. This is never a movie I would have chosen, nor was chosen for me. And so I tried it. And I was very skeptical because I'm just like, crime, whatever. I don't really care. And then the end, I was like, what? And then this really opened my eyes to, like, the other twisty movies, like Memento, the magic one.
The Prestige.
Things like that.
Christopher Nolan joints both.
Fight Club.
We might have actually seen Fight Club before this. No,
if you, I guess. No, okay. This is truly the first movie I remember watching with you.
Okay.
And, yeah, so it stuck with me, and it also kind of, like, was my entry into, okay, I can trust this guy to find movies that I'll like.
I seem to remember, I'm trying to remember, because you remember it as me saying, I think you will like this. I remember it as me thinking something along the lines of, give this movie a shot, because it will tell me the kinds of movies you might be interested in, like, from here. Like, this to me was a barometer of, do you like a twist? But it wasn't particularly violent, but it deals with violence.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's obviously violent topics. There are people that die.
There's blood.
There's blood. But it's not like, you know, gore fest by any means.
Yeah.
But it's a thoughtful movie as opposed to, you know, just being fodder. So.
Yeah. And you were right. It opened my eyes to, like, a new genre of movies that I have truly never seen before. Had in the past. Truly never seen any of those movies before.
Yeah.
So it was fun. And I just remember being like, I love this guy. But I don't even think we said I love you yet by the time we were watching this.
Oh, I'm sure we hadn't. Yeah, no.
Yeah. So that was my first time watching it. And then we watched it again the other night for this. And I said to you, I wish this was my first time watching this all over again. Because I knew some, I didn't remember, I don't remember a dang thing in this movie. The plot is not really
if you were meaningful. To, so like, there's been, I know some people have done, like, different edits where, and by the way, also, in addition to Scandal noted, spoilers. If we have not already said that by now, we are going to spoil the crap out of this movie. And as we've articulated, it is one of them that is most famous for the fact that it's got just this ending that you don't see coming.
Yes.
So that already, frankly, is a spoiler I would not have wanted to hear before I saw it. So I would encourage you, listener, if you've not seen this movie, like, stop.
Yes.
Stop right now. If you have any thinking about possibly wanting to watch this movie,
don't listen to us.
Don't listen to us until after you've done it.
I agree.
Hit pause, come back to us, leave us in your playlist for podcasts, but go watch this movie. It's actually, if you have Amazon, it is available at the time of this recording on Freevee. You can go watch it with ads, but for free. So go watch it.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty short too. It's only an hour and 45 minutes.
Thank the Lord.
So, yeah, go watch it. And then now we can spoil the crap out of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I was saying this, I wish I was watching it for the first time.
Yes, thank you. And I know that feeling very well. and what I was going to say, sorry, because yes, I appreciate you putting me back onto track. What I was going to say is I've seen people have put together edits of this where they take all of the events, because this is also one of the movies that kind of plays with time. You, like, start somewhere, and as the movie goes on, you start to realize where certain time frames of things that you've already seen happen, because you start with this sort of boat exploding and somebody and a Keaton being killed. And then you sort of jump back to somebody who is Kevin Spacey's character is Verbal Kent. He is, you know, being interrogated, but he's being interrogated after this thing. And then he starts telling a story about a time that they were all interrogated before this thing. And so it's like, you're jumping around a little bit and you kind of, it's confusing at first, and then it just slowly but surely becomes more and more explained. Mm-hmm. People have edited it so things were happening in sequence in terms of, like,
really?
This is the sort of, like, chronologically the first thing that happened and then going forward. And it is boring because, as you said, the plot is actually not that cool or inventive until you realize the mastermind behind it all.
Dang.
Which also gets into, I would argue, this is one of those movies that most clearly articulates an unreliable narrator for the entire film in the modern movie lexicon. And to that end, I feel like you have to ask yourself how much of what you watched on screen was true at all.
Yeah.
Because it is completely being told from the perspective of Verbal Kin.
But we'll get there.
Okay, well, I kind of put us there already, but okay.
So, yeah, it's not a movie I would choose. Parts of it are boring because I'm like, whatever, it's a crime movie. But in the end, you're like, whoa.
So, excellent. Yeah. We've gotten so excited, though.
We forgot to do.
That we went straight from our love story with this movie.
Ugh.
To forgetting to do Danny's Dingle, which I know we have some people who genuinely do really love this part of the podcast. So we want to make sure we give it to them so that they don't miss out on everybody's favorite segment.
Time for Danny's Dingle.
A boat. Fire. Cigarette. Pee. Explosion. And then police office. Police line up, put bad guys together, make bad things happen. Kobayashi, Redfoot.
That's a character. Yep.
Bang bang, shoot shoot, cocaine. Bang bang, shoot shoot, get the boat. Bang bang. Everybody dies except for. Oh, what's his name?
Are you looking for the
Kaiser Sose?
Kaiser Sose! So, movie lovers, I think maybe one of the things that made me think about Danielle watching this is also this is one of those movies that since 1995 has been spoofed or referenced or made fun of. If you've ever seen Scary Movie and not understood why Dewey, like the main sort of mentally handicapped character in that, who's a it turns out to be the one who kills people in the movie Scary Movie. Well, it's a reference to this movie here.
Really?
Yeah.
I had definitely seen Scary Movie before I saw this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's that final scene, if you were to go back and watch it now, if you may remember, there's a final scene where, you know, he's sort of like, he has physical afflictions that character does in Scary Movie, and he's not at all suave, and at the very end of the movie, he's sort of like walking off and then gets into like, I don't know, a sports car or something like that, and as he's walking, he loses all of his physical afflictions.
Got it.
Just like Kaiser Soze.
Probably not say mentally handicapped.
I apologize. Please correct me.
A person with a physical disability or a person with an intellectual disability.
And see, I don't know. It's been so long since I saw Scary Movie that I genuinely wouldn't know what that character was supposed to be. I know that they would have used words to describe them that I would not now use words to describe them. So,
but
thank you. I appreciate you correcting me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we could talk about that part of this movie. It's difficult slash great that they essentially, the plot is that this guy, the bad man that I'm not going to say his name, could not be a killer. He could be innocent because even though he's done some bad things in the past, his crimes weren't horrible. He was just like stealing or whatever. But they call him this in the movie, quote, a cripple because his one hand doesn't work and his other foot turns in. They never say how he got that way, if he was born that way, whatever. And then that's how he basically gets off scot-free.
To some degree, yeah.
And then in the end, he walks away. And he was faking it the whole time. That's hard. But also, I don't know, I'm very conflicted with my thoughts on this. Because, first of all, you should never freaking fake a disability. That's so messed up.
Yeah.
But the other thing is it proves that society truly thinks that if you have a disability, you are incapable of these things. And this bad man in the movie was the most evil, smartest character in the entire movie. He played the long game. He was truly, truly, truly a genius. And so I think it's also maybe pointing out, I would like to think it's a social commentary on, like, don't underestimate a single person, no matter disability, their ability levels or not. It does suck that he was like, I'm going to use this to trick people. And I think back in the 90s, that probably worked a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so I was very conflicted on that storyline that I didn't think about it too much.
I don't know if this
9 years ago.
I don't know if this will help you.
Okay.
That is not entirely the reason why he gets off.
I know.
Okay.
But it also is, he's clearly hiding.
Yes.
He's faking his disability.
He is faking his disability because, specifically, it makes people take him less seriously. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they would never believe that he is the evil Kaiser Soze, that everyone, you know, mm-hmm. is this boogeyman, because surely this person with a disability who seems so bumbling would not be that person. However, there are clues that I caught on this rewatch because I was paying a little bit more attention that, like, from the get-go, now that we've given the spoiler, the evil man who plays Verbal Kint, a.k.a. Kaiser Soze, there are clues to that person being the mastermind from some of the first scenes. So we have the opening, we have the boat exploding, and then we have people mm-hmm. being, like, pulling bodies out of the river and saying, like, oh, you know, who did this kind of thing? And then you get the voiceover that starts with Verbal Kint, and it says, you know, it all started with yada yada. But before you get that, you go to him sitting. They turn on that. So somebody asks the question, who could have done this? In like a scene that then immediately the next frame is an image of Verbal Kint as he's sitting in. So again, for those of you who know movies, TV, things like that, you'll see these like kind of quick little foreshadowings or like something that's happening at the end of one scene is intentionally designed to be like going into the next scene. And so the filmmakers did, in my opinion, a brilliant job of like, you don't see it coming because you then learn who this character is and you, of course, immediately start to get like, oh, well, that's not who it is.
Mm-hmm.
But they did actually on some subconscious level sort of like trick your brain of like in thinking, we're asking the question, who did all of this?
And then they
boom,
tell you
they
right
show
away.
You right away.
Dang.
And then not too far away from that, when we get to go back and we see the two cops are kind of talking to each other and the, like the one is, you know, Clueless's dad is sort of talking to Shorty and, you know, Shorty's like, why can't you, yada yada, or why can't I talk to him? And Clueless's dad says something, and he says basically, he's talking about how, like, he can't let him talk to him because he's, quote, end quote, and I wrote this down, protected on high from the Prince of Darkness himself. So Verbal Kint, you don't quite track that this is who they're talking about, but they're talking about Verbal Kint, and, like, this one guy, he's about to get off, not because of a disability that he has, but because someone is protecting him. Someone is pulling strings, and what you don't know is that someone is himself.
Which it hurts my head to think about how that ever happens, but I know it's a movie, but you know. But also, yeah, they kept saying immunity, 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 immunity. So like, you know he's going to get off from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
I will say though, this movie is, I think sometimes I'm dumb. And I ask a lot of questions on this podcast about like, because I don't follow movies all the time. This movie is a little confusing at the beginning, and I was like,
who is who
and what's happening? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I genuinely don't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my second time watching it, and I'm supposed to know what's happening, and I still didn't know what's happening. But I guess looking back on it, you don't really have to know what's happening. You really just have to follow the story that is being told. And the story that is being told is that there was a carjacking. They stole all these guns, right? They stole a truck.
Somebody, you don't know who the they is until much later. Yeah, but
a truck with a bunch of guns, and they bring in, quote, the usual suspects. They bring in the people who would have done it before.
Yeah, it's like, it's the idea of, some people may be familiar with this if you've watched other crime movies or if are just familiar with the idea of like, oh, when a crime is committed in a given area, in a given city, the police kind of know, okay, chances are this type of crime is being committed by one of these career criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea here is that they brought in all of these career criminals.
And then from there, they actually did, quote, the dumbest thing they could do, and they brought them together so that they start doing more crimes. They're like, well, we're here anyways. What else is out there? Just one more job, one more job, one more job.
And what you don't know until the very end is that it is, in fact, Verbal Kint, a.k.a. Kaiser Soze, who pulled their strings to ensure that those people were, in fact, put into the cell together, knowing that this would be the likely outcome. And because you find out he's one of the people in there, also sort of, you know, being the one who fed it. Because while we don't get all of that scene of them talking about and planning the next job that they do together,
mm-hmm.
you know from it, Verbal Kint is the one with the plan, the man with the plan, the man with the plan. He's the mm-hmm. one who's got the plan that means it has to be all of them, has to bring all of them to work on the job. Otherwise, the job won't go the way that they want it to go.
And he plays dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, who's this? What's that? I don't know. What's happening? He genuinely, but in his mind, is like, oh, I am pushing the narrative forward of getting these guys to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard because they have the worst criminal of them all.
Mm-hmm.
Keaton. What's his name?
Keaton.
First name. I don't know.
I genuinely
Michael
don't know.
Keaton.
Definitely not a claimed actor, Michael Keaton. Anyway.
Keaton, who is supposed to be literally like the devil.
Uh-huh.
He's supposed to be horrible that he's killed all these people, all these women. He's done very, very bad things. But you don't see any of that. You just see he's in love
mm-hmm.
with someone who happens to be a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
And he's changed and he doesn't want to do the jobs. But he still keeps getting pinned because he's done bad things in the past.
So now here's my question to you. Mm-hmm. Do you think real world, quote unquote, Keaton was in fact a changed man and really was in love with and wanting to leave crime? Or was that just the version of Keaton that Verbal Kent, a.k.a. Kaiser Sose, was putting forward?
You're hurting my head. I don't have, that's hard to think about layers.
Right? So, like, what I mean, listeners, is if you've watched this and you think about it, the whole movie, the whole, everything we see in terms of the interactions of these criminals with each other is the retelling from Verbal Kent, who seems, obviously, to be normal, but once you get to the end of the movie, you realize, oh, shit, he could be lying about literally everything. So the fact that there's all these police officers, like that one guy, Shorty from Modern Family, he's like, I know Keaton. He's a real terrible person. He's a horrible, mm-hmm. there's no way he's nice to people. He didn't treat you this way. If he treated you that way, he was lying and he was totally a terrible, yada, yada, yada. For all we know, every interaction that Verbal Kent had with Keaton was in fact indicative of that guy being terrible and indicative of him playing the lawyer. All we know is that what the police know to be true, a.k.a. they're like, that lawyer existed. That lawyer's the person who got them out of jail that first time. We know that the police would know that that lawyer was attached to, you know, whoever the sort of the extradition person who ends up being the real reason that they go on the boat to assassinate that guy. We know that she was tied to that. But you don't know, for all we know, it was just he paid her a lot. Keaton paid her a lot. And she was, you know, a dirty lawyer or something like that. Damn, right? I just made your head explode.
Yeah, I don't know, because I watched this movie the second time, as is, as the story was unfolding. Because like I said, I didn't remember a single thing about the plot, honestly, because it's not that important.
Right, like you're sort of, and this is, I feel like it's, that's so beautiful. What's so awesome about this movie is you're struggling so hard to follow what's happening early on, and mm-hmm. as it's slowly unveiling things, to the point where you then finally get to the end. And if it's been years since you've watched this movie, you don't remember anything except the end.
Yeah.
Like, the details are just muddy to you because they were all this seemingly innocuous and unimportant stuff to get to that twist. But when you look back at the movie again through the lens of the twist, you start to notice all of these inconsistencies and these additional questions, which is why I love this movie.
Yeah. So, as I was saying, I was watching it through the lens of the way he was telling it again. And then at the end I go, did any of that actually happen? So what if none of it happened?
Correct.
What if he literally just killed the 27 people himself? I don't know.
Could be.
I don't know. So maybe he never even hung out with Keaton.
I mean, it could be that they never hung out outside of the jail cell. Correct. But yeah. That's what I'm saying. Is like, literally the only thing the police know is that these guys were brought in. This lawyer got them out. And then they found those guys dead at various places. And they found Verbal Kent alive at the scene.
Yeah.
That's all they know. That is the only thing. Everything else, every single element else could be a complete fabrication. Now, here's, I'm going to help you think even more and break your brain a little bit more. So now that you've thought about, oh, it must all be BS, he gets picked up by the lawyer Kobayashi.
I know.
But you know that the name Kobayashi came from the bottom of the coffee mug. So then is it that there is that lawyer? And he just made up the name, so you can't find the, you know, the guy that's actually helping him out. Or was there no lawyer, and he just sort of was envisioning that person because it's his right-hand person? Or was everything else actually true? The only thing that was changed was the names? Or you don't know.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons this movie is actually good to rewatch.
Agreed. I don't want to watch it again, but...
We'll get to that.
I also was thinking, like, you know, usually on this podcast, I'm like, let's walk scene by scene. Nothing matters. The scenes don't matter. I think the bigger question is, like, what the heck happened and how did we get here? And again, the movie is really boring until, like, the last, I would say, 90 seconds. Because you're just like, oh, it was him the whole time. Sure, that's like a twist in itself. But the twisty twister twist part is that he leaves. He gets his gold watch, which he had on when he was murdering Keaton. And
oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Good touch. Good catch.
And his gold lighter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you realize every single thing he's been telling you was in front of his face the whole time on the police board.
Mm-hmm.
That's the twist. The twist is not that he's the killer. The twist is that I don't understand it.
Like, and again, how much of it was being made up and how much it was not. Because he's also something that has nothing to do with the story about crime. He keeps wanting to go back to him talking about, oh, in Skokie, Illinois, did I ever tell you about the time that I was part of a barbershop quartet in Skokie, Illinois? And you realize that there's a brand quartet from Skokie, Illinois that is the corkboard.
Illinois.
Yeah, Skokie, Illinois.
Yeah.
And again, like, so then how much is made up and how much is real? I would argue it's not even the, like, oh, you're putting it together because... As someone who's seen this movie multiple times, I still, for some reason, was not grabbing the fact that the gold watch was from the beginning. You see the killer use that gold watch. You see the killer use that gold. Because you're not quite there yet. It's like that moment that things are starting to be put together, and he's like, it's flashing back and forth. But just before that, there's almost the surprise of, like, Kaiser Sose is Keaton. Keaton is Kaiser Sose. And you feel like, in that first moment, when Shorty from Modern Family is... saying, don't you see, Verbal? Keaton was playing you. He is Kaiser Sose. And up until this point, you've had this mystery of who the hell is this Kaiser Sose person that they keep talking about? They keep dropping this name. They're making such a big deal out of it. We're waiting for the sketch. The sketch is going to come back and it's going to be whoever the person is. Why? And they managed to, like you said, it's kind of like almost boring, except for the fact that you're like, just for whatever reason, just like curious. They give you just enough to be like, well, what is the mystery here? I want to stick around until I figure out the answer to this question.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make you feel like they've given it to you.
Mm-hmm.
They give you this big surprise, and it's this emotional beat, and you see Verbal Kent being all distraught, like, no, it can't be my friend. He was so kind to me. And it's you're thinking that's going to be the twist.
Yeah.
But then it's a 1-2 punch. You haven't even recovered from the twist of Keaton being Kaiser Sose when you are just walloped and knocked out by the idea that it wasn't Keaton, it was in fact Verbal Kent.
Who, his long game was to pin it on Keaton the whole time.
Correct.
I think he was like, who's the worst guy in the city who's known for awful things? It's Keaton.
Uh-huh.
So he kills Keaton.
Uh-huh.
And so there's no one who can get in trouble for it because Keaton's dead.
And in fact is
the one
who's...
And then he kills Kaiser Sose, quote.
Very smartly placing... Sorry, yeah. So now he's killed Kaiser Sose, so his... ego, people will not think that he exists. Again, and then that's why the movie ends with, because the whole movie is not actually even the story, it's the story behind the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that line, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was making people believe he didn't exist. Or, in this case, ceased to exist and was dead. And then, just like that.
Yeah. Because... I believe Bad Boy Verbal as a narrator 99% of the stories he's telling.
Okay.
Until, at the very end, he claims that someone else shot Keaton.
Uh-huh.
But you know he shot Keaton.
Uh-huh. So you think that the story that brought them all together, the fact that they did that job together, you think even Keaton being a nice guy who was trying to turn over a new leaf, you think all of that's true?
I did.
Okay.
As you're watching the movie, you do believe it.
Oh, of course you
do. You have
while
no reason not to believe it.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. I think there's a case to be made for that the only thing that's actually not true is the names. Like, he didn't give the real names of things because that's what he pulled from the board. But I think that whoever, you know, Redfoot was not that person's real name because he pulled that name from the board. But they did go out to California and there was, in fact, a fence that existed in California who gave them another job, who this, that, and the other. I think you're probably right in the sense that I think that is, in fact, true. And here's the reason why. Because otherwise...
The cops.
Well, No, otherwise, why would he want to bring those five people together? There's a line earlier on where it says, all of you have been brought together. Kobayashi, the first meeting, he says, I've brought you in because you unknowingly robbed from Kaiser Sose.
Yeah.
You unknowingly robbed from Kaiser Sose. You unknowingly robbed from Kaiser Sose. I do think that whole, that might be true. It's just that you don't know that Verbal Kent didn't rob from Kaiser Sose because he is Kaiser Sose, but everyone else in the room might have. And so that's actually him getting his vengeance, is intentionally making sure that those guys are going to die. But in the process, he's going to pull some other strings and make a lot of money for himself.
See, I thought of that differently. I thought that those crimes actually were not Kaiser Sose related at all, but he just said they were to make them have similar motive.
Could be. And then that's, again, a layer of like, well, where do you believe? What was true?
Yeah.
Is it just the names that are changed? Is it that all of that was false because Kaiser Sose always lies? Is it that the whole entire story that he was giving to the police was fabricated and none of it happened the way that he said?
Is there, okay, this is a dumb question. Is there an answer?
Oh, I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't know.
Like, do the people who created the movie actually have an answer and they had it in mind the whole time?
This is where we were given the compliment that we do in our Love Notes lots of research. And right now, I'm not entirely sure what the answer to that question is. So we did not research that.
Or is this just a movie that was created? This is also an example of a, I understand why you love movies so much, because it makes you think. Was this just a movie that was created to be like, you think about it, person?
Yeah, and I think that's why I probably have never looked it up. Because I think the beauty of the art of this film is the fact that the question lingers.
Yeah. Because, again, I knew Verbal was Kaiser Sose. It is such an iconic scene. You see him walking.
With a severe limp.
Yep, and then not.
Yeah.
He just all of a sudden is like, I'm a normal person now. Gets away. You remember that. You don't remember. I personally didn't remember that every name and everything was made up.
Mm-hmm.
So then I wrote this, and I think I asked you this the exact same thing 9 years ago.
Did none of
this
happen?
Did any of this happen? Did none of this happen? And then look, what? I
love her notes.
I don't know.
And that's what's awesome about it, though. And this is what I love about movies. And this was why this is sort of a retrospective for us, as being like, the first time I think I did make you realize a movie could be something more than just something to make you laugh, to alleviate your pain for a time, to let you turn your brain off. Most of the movies that you have chosen to watch, while some of them are very good, especially some of the comedies, on the surface, they largely are very shallow.
Yeah, they tell you what is happening.
What
you're
seeing
is
what's happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's no deeper thought after the fact. There's not any deeper existential questions that the movie is supposed to make you think about. And I'm not saying that's bad art by any means. It's very good art. It's very different art.
And it's what I seek out most times because it's what I think I need.
Which is fine, and that's great. But then to me, sort of, and this is where I said not bad because I'm going to say the term elevated, and it makes it automatically sound like I'm saying better. That's not necessarily what I mean, but I mean elevated in the sense that there's more depth to it. Is movies like this. And I think this was the first movie, the reason you see it as like the first movie we watched together. It's the first movie that we watched together that you truly knew, movies can be something more.
I agree.
Yeah.
I don't think ever in my life I had watched movies that make you think more.
Right.
So this was like my first time, not just with you, but in
life.
Eye-opening to know that they are more. And it gave me a window into your soul more of like, I understand why you like movies. But I do want to be fair and say, I can't watch this shit all the time. This is too much. Like, we watched this last weekend, and my brain is still itching. I can't keep putting myself through this. So let me watch She's the Man, where she gets to play on the men's soccer team.
Six times.
The end, you know? And Channing Tatum sticks a tampon up his nose. Like, that's important to me, too.
Well, and I think the other reason that this movie is what sticks out to me, and it goes to, we've talked a lot about on this podcast, no matter what the movie is, I almost always want to talk about it afterwards. Because to me, that is the fun of a movie, is getting to know another human being by how they experienced a movie, by what they thought about a movie, by what they noticed in a movie. You notice things that I didn't notice, and I've seen it more times than you.
Mm-hmm.
I clearly thought about things in a way that you had not thought about because I made your brain explode while we were still on mic and on camera. That is, to me, the beauty of movies. And that's why I usually love movies like this more than others, because there's more to talk about. So even movies that you are not great. Like I love going to go talk on you know, superhero cinephiles, for example. And I especially love to pick sort of panned movies, movies that are not necessarily good, because there's more to talk about like, but what was the kernel here that could have been good? Or what were they trying for? As opposed to just, yeah, this movie was great. It's the best thing ever. It's so much fun. Like,
that's fair.
Yeah.
I wish they made more movies like this in the sense that, like, I feel like I've kind of watched them all that I'm willing to watch.
And I personally argue that that is because, and this is, I'm going to get political, apologies everyone, but the last several years, the only movies that get made are more surface level. They are huge, big budget movies, and they're no longer about art. They are about the making of a buck. And I get that that's always going to be the case to some degree. But when you lose the ability to make movies like this that are much smaller budget, at the time it was a bunch of people that nobody knew, and most importantly, the writing.
Yeah.
We talked about how the writer is someone, again, Christopher McQuarrie, who's written a lot of other great movies that we love, not all of them that are like this, but this is something that a robot, a chat AI, will never be able to write. It will replicate and simply do exactly the same thing over. It will never do something this unique. And that is why we need to support people who are on strike right now, because we need to have real human beings, both in front of and behind these cameras, who can do these things for real life and bring that creativity where they are bringing something completely new to the world that has never been done before.
I agree. I had a lot of high hopes for Barbie, to be honest.
I did too. I liked it. I didn't like it as much as I wanted to.
I wanted it to be something like this, where there was more questions and it was more nuanced.
And I personally believe, I could be wrong, sorry to continue on that, but I personally believe Greta Gerwig, the filmmaker behind that movie, you can see the kernels of where that was, where things wanted to go, and I suspect that there was studio pushback and or Mattel pushback of, nope, let's keep this the lighthearted fun, which is why that movie did not hit as hard for me, because I feel like it's like, oh, you were touching on that thing that I wanted. You didn't quite hit it because you stopped to instead make the silly fun movie, which was the thing that was, I'm sure, pushed by corporations wanting, you know, corporate fodder, and they were right because it made them a lot of money.
Yeah, I was going to say, as capitalism progresses and they take over the world, like Bob Iger is taking over the world and all these bad people. I don't know if he's bad, but, you know. Anyways, people are pushing shit out. And it's literally shit.
It's that phrase of content. It becomes just content. Something. Put something out.
Give me a 3-hour, 20-minute movie of a superhero that I've seen 6 times before.
Yeah.
That is so unnecessary.
Yeah.
I'd rather sit there, watch a movie like this, or this. Maybe we'll cover this one. I don't know. I remember watching Memento and being like, oh my God, give me something like that.
I love that.
We need more of that. We need more original ideas. And wow, this has become like a preaching podcast, but like, these are the movies that I get why you love movies.
Yes.
Sometimes I watch other movies. I'm like, please do not make me watch Doctor Strange 3. And I know there's going to be another one, but
yeah,
it's not as an enjoyable experience as something that really does make you think and really helps you open your mind or break your brain, I guess.
Yeah.
But comedies have a place too.
Agreed.
Marvel movies, come on. Just stop. Sorry. Hot take. We've seen enough.
I mean, I would argue that that's because they've started doing things too formulaic, in my opinion, and they're not willing to take risks and they're not willing to do things that, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So shall we get to our, do you have any closing thoughts on this movie? Again, I'm shocked at myself by not going scene by scene because the scenes are irrelevant. I did make a note that Stephen Baldwin's pretty hot. I never saw him like hot before, but in this movie I was like, oh, he's pretty hot.
Okay. I'm just going to let that pass. Anyway, no, I think I said most of them, but like, so I really love the movie that like it's slowly, gradually, it makes you feel intentionally totally lost.
Yes.
Like the fact that it cuts from different times quickly, the fact that you don't know who you're referring to all the time, it's intentionally making you feel totally lost because the whole movie is about clarity slowly coming. And then at the last second to make you realize even that clarity that you've gained isn't real.
Yeah. And then it just ends.
Much like life. anyway.
And then it just ends.
But I do think his acting, I wanted to say the evil man's acting, which if you go see some of his other stuff, again, probably not as much acting. But I think one of the things that's interesting about acting sometimes is when you have to play like layers to it. So in the moment when he's being attacked, or not, sorry, not attacked. He's being told, like, Keaton is the person, and he sort of breaks down, and he's crying. He's like, why me, then? Why would he pick me? You know now that that person knows exactly what's going on, and is, and I think the acting in that moment is pretty stellar, because it's like, you can almost, it's like an actor playing an actor, but a convincing actor, because the police has to believe him, but once you now know the secret, you watch that scene, and you're like, oh, there's just this touch of, like, Spacey played it intentionally not straight. Like, there's just mm-hmm. a little bit of an edge where you can tell he's pretending. Yeah. And I think that's difficult to do, and I just was very impressed by that. Oh, one last thing. Tickled by the fact that Verbal Kent describes Kaiser Sose, or at least depicts him when they show him in the video, as like this long, luscious,
like Fabio
hair. And the character of Verbal Kent, who is actually Kaiser Sose, is bald and middling and has no luscious flowing hair. So.
Yeah. I didn't like the one scene where they, like, raped the woman. I don't think that was necessary.
Oh, it was entirely unnecessary.
Yeah. And then the shot, the children. That could have been taken out. But otherwise, shall we get to our hearts?
Yeah.
And renewing the vows?
Let's do it.
You want to go first?
So I definitely would renew my vows. I don't need to see it anytime soon. I think having about 5 years in between or so is correct, or even I guess almost 10, like, you know, put some time in between mm-hmm. it. But I suspect someday our future children will be asking questions about, what do you learn about cinema? And I'll do the same thing to them. I'll be like, all right, now that you're old enough, let's sit down and watch this movie that shows how cinema can be really good. I'm torn because I don't know that I can find a true flaw in the movie itself, but I hesitate to give a movie a perfect score
because of who you are as a person.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but, like, also because of some of the people that were involved. But I'm trying to separate the art from the movie. And I guess we've watched a lot of movies that feel much more dated than this did. I'll tell you what, because the stuff you just mentioned, the rape is really not necessary. I get that it's supposed to, like,
Be evil.
But, like, truly, him murdering his whole family would be evil enough. They didn't need to also have his wife. Like, it's literally just this throwaway line for absolutely no reason.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 4.75 because there's elements that are not necessary that are in there.
Cool. I'll give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay.
Because, first of all, there's 1.5 women actresses actresses in general in this movie.
Fair. Yep.
And I just don't like when there's not women, but I guess it was a story made for men. Whatever.
I agree that that's not a good enough excuse. Yeah.
And there were some scenes that I just didn't like. It's, you know, that's just not for me, some of that stuff. Would I renew my vows? I really am done with this movie, I think.
Okay.
Because I was so disappointed going into it already knowing the twist.
I could see that.
And I think now that we've talked about it, I don't think the first time we talked about it as much, that's why I didn't remember the twist, like the triple twist at the end. I think I'll remember it now, so... It's just not as fun because it's just a boring crime movie where men are shooting each other, so.
I would argue it is a different experience because there's things that you notice each time that's a little bit differently, much as I'm talking about now, which is part of the reason I enjoy it. But I also get your point of, like, the real trick of this movie is the end.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Otherwise, it's an hour, 45 minutes of a crime story. And that's not my jam.
That's fair. All right. Well, then that is it. We are going to get going. Thank you, movie lovers, for joining us. Thank you for being with us this 4 years that we've been going. And at least for right now, we have every intent to keep going. So we'll see you for our 5-year anniversary, where we, I think, have lined up already a movie that we have teased many, many times.
But so, I have not seen.
And so I don't want to spoil too much. And please forgive me. I'm going to do it anyway.
What? No, come back season 5 for
she's not letting
a movie
me, folks.
That
she's
I'm
not letting me.
I'm not gonna like.
with that, you can find me on.
I love you, Nick.
We do plugs first.
Oh, shoot,
I wasn't forgetting yet. We do plugs first.
I just want to tell you I love you.
I love you too.
Oh, you too. Can we get petition movie?
Okay. Anyway, you can find our podcast on Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky. I can't even keep track. There's too many social medias at this point, but if it exists, I think we're on it. If it's popular right now, Hive at and the letter N, Love With Movies, all spelled out, at N Love With Movies. You can find me on many of those social platforms at Nick Loves Movies. That's N-I-C-L-U-V, love, Nick Loves Movies, where I like talking about all these things and love keeping the conversation going about this and other things. So go find us, follow us on social media, anything you need to plug, Danielle.
Yeah, you can follow me on my socials, which are all at DannyMiami4, I think. But also, I was thinking, you know, if you guys wanted to throw us a anniversary gift or two.
Oh, I do. This is, I didn't realize we were panhandling at the end of this.
Okay. I only am is because we had a fire and we lost a lot of things. So, you know.
We lost our garage, folks, a car inside of it, everything in the
garage.
It's been a stressful month.
We lost all of my Christmas decorations. So my Venmo is at DannyMiami92 if you want to throw a gal some coins. It will go towards putting things back in our garage because we lost everything.
DannyMiami92.
Yep.
On Venmo.
Okay.
All right.
I love you, Nick.
And with that, I love you, Danny. And we love you, movie lovers.
Thanks for being with us for 4 years.
Bye-bye.
Bye.